hands again. We have faced them before. Humanity's longing after so many deaths, something more human than war. But part of me whispers, take your body and run away. Leave the vision to somebody else. And I hear myself say, but I'd rather be dancing at the edge of my grave. I'd rather be holding you close as we march forward, loving and brave. I'd rather be singing in the face of my fear. I'd rather be dancing in front of the guns as long as I'm here. Life is so dangerous that there's little to fear. Life is so possible. Every breath the frontier, and they brought out the guns once again, 'cause they haven't a clue that we could be dancing the whole human race. Each one must choose. And I'd rather be dancing at the edge of my grave. I'd rather be holding you close as we march forward, loving and brave. I'd rather be singing in the face of my fear. I'd rather be dancing in front of the guns as long as I'm here.
That's Libby Roderick. Thank you, Margaret. Dancing in front of the guns. Feels that way sometimes. This is Carol. I'm very happy to be here with Arts Live and Local. And that be Arts Live from the parking lot with the help of the staff at KMUN, without whom life would be so empty. That's my first pitch of the day, folks. Coastradio.org. Hit the donate button. Keep us alive. And thank you, Graham. And thank you to my first guests. I have two folks. Tandy Rosenbaum, are you there?
Yep. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Tandy. Good to know. We've been trying to get you back in here, but I guess this will have to do for now. Tandy is the proprietor of the Sou'wester Lodge and, what's the full name?
Sou'wester Historic Lodge and Vintage Trailer Resort.
Oh, that's why I didn't
We've upgraded ourselves.
I love it. That's great. And that would be in Seaview, Washington. And Sou'wester, has grown so much in the years. How long have you been there?
It's been 8 years now.
Ya Allah, I had no idea it was that long, but you certainly have not wasted any time. And I'm going to get you to tell us about lots of the things happening there. But first, I want to bring in our other guest, Carolyn Hopkins. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm glad to have you here. This is quite wonderful. Carolyn Hopkins comes to us from the depths. Well, that's the name of her solo show that will be up for 2 months, which is wonderful, at the Sou'wester in the Vintage Trailer, now a permanent art gallery. Terrific. So, Carolyn, are you calling me from the state of Washington, or are you here in Oregon, or...
I am in Washington. I live out in the Gorge, and so I'm working from home today up in Lyle, Washington.
Lyle, Washington. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think I read that you've got plenty of room, which sounds like a good idea, since you're since you're a sculptor.
Ew.
Yeah. And your work, I haven't seen it in person, but I've been enjoying it online. And congratulations on the show and beautiful, beautiful work. It really caught my eye because you have all kinds of degrees, Masters of Fine Arts in sculpture from Cranbrook Academy of Art. But we often think of sculpture as wood or clay or stone. But it seems like you have expanded this, I see. I think I'm looking at glass and possibly even textiles. Is that?
Yeah. So I use an array of materials. My background, going to Cranbrook Academy of Art was definitely focused on sculpture, but also I had a large interest in traditional craft materials and how those were used. I feel that I use them in a bit of a subversive way. I don't generally take craft materials and use them in a traditional manner. Mm-hmm. So some of the work on my website, I have an iceberg I made out of stained glass. And
how big is that piece?
That piece is probably about 4 feet tall.
Okay.
And about 5 feet long.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, each one of your pieces is so different from the others.
Oh.
Obviously, each is unique, but quite different. And I was trying to figure out some kind of dimensions, and I got lost. But
that's a good question.
Tell us also about the name of this show, From the Depths. What does that mean?
Yeah, so a lot of my work is really interested in rapid climate change and issues of conservation and preservation, and sort of where we are at in terms of 2020 and looking into the future. And,
oh, boy.
I had made some of the pieces that will be on display while I was in residence at Sou'wester last year.
Uh-huh.
And the cabin I was staying in had a whale vertebrae and whale rib that I took casts off of to make new pieces from. And so that title is really just kind of thinking a little bit about the ocean in particular and
the political state of affairs, perhaps.
Yeah, and also in terms of using things like stained glass and craft materials, like what it means to be pulling from that historical tradition within those mediums.
Mm. Nice. So, I read something about the coming from the viewpoint of the end. I wasn't quite sure what that meant, but re-examining our current political and ecological landscapes. And you also used the word, or someone used the word, solastalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with that. I should have looked it up. Is it a real word?
It is, and I wasn't familiar with it until probably a few months ago. And basically what that word means, it's a newer word, and it basically refers to our stress and the way that we are feeling because of rapid climate change.
Oh.
So really this new feeling of dread or, you know, being afraid of what the future holds because of the impacts of rapid climate change.
Wow. So have you mm-hmm. always been involved in political work as well? Let me go back. Let me start with another question. Have you always been involved in making art?
I have. I'm definitely someone that even as a kid was always building like cardboard forts or drawing or doing all sorts of things. And then as I got older, I really recognized that that was what I was, you know, most interested in doing. And so I pursued that, you know, through school and then have also worked at various arts organizations and then continued my studio practice alongside that.
So did you have encouragement in, when you say in school, I see that you got a Bachelor of Fine Arts as well in mm-hmm. Kansas. Are you from Kansas?
No, I'm actually from Portland. And I Bend in Portland was where I was raised. And then when I was 18, I applied to every art school, as you can imagine. And at that age, I was really, you know, concerned about taking out student loans. And so Kansas City Art Institute gave me quite a bit of scholarship money, so I ended up going there, and it worked out because it was a great program. And then from there, I lived in New York City. I spent summers working in national parks to make money, and then eventually went to Cranbrook and finally made it back to the Pacific Northwest about 8 years ago.
I love the way you put your life together, though. You were smart enough to realize the consequences of student loans, or at least you didn't want them hanging over your head, and so and how was it being in Kansas?
Yeah, I loved it there. It was definitely a culture shock for me. Mm-hmm. I had been born and raised in the Northwest, mm-hmm. and you know I traveled a little, but hadn't spent time in the Midwest, and so it was definitely a period of adjustment. But Kansas City has a very Bird just ran into the window. Kansas City has a very vibrant art scene with a lot of folks who come there to go to school or come there to make work. So it was I ended up having a great 4 years there and really enjoyed my time, and then moved from there to New York City, and I stayed in New York for probably about 4 years before mm-hmm. going to graduate school at Cranbrook.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because I don't think I've ever spoken with anyone. No, I can't remember ever speaking to anyone who went to school in Kansas. So this is a good report. You know, you can tell them you're advertising for them. So And okay, so now I'll go back to what was going to be my first question, which is, put another way, when did your political and ecological awakening come, and when did you realize that you could put all of this together effectively?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up out in this region, most people are aware of, you know, ecological issues, maybe more so than in other areas, especially with logging and all the different issues that we have there mm-hmm. specific to the Northwest. And, you know, in the summers, I was working in Grand Teton National Park during undergrad and leading trail rides on horseback and really having a lot of conflict over what it meant to preserve space and land mm-hmm. And what that looked like in reality in terms of having, you know, thousands of tourists come through those mm-hmm. areas every year. And I think that just really started influencing the work I was making. And so I'm not sure that I ever, you know, saw it as political, although it certainly is, and I would say my more recent work is as well. But I think, you know, when I go to make work, I make it about things that I am interested in or concerned with, and really try to utilize materials that I can also have some other conversations about, you know, the histories of those materials. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Using them in different ways to kind of have various conversations at the same time.
Okay, speaking...
The work has been interested in ecological issues probably from, you know, age 18 forward and just kind of continues
Speaking of materials, tell us about the piece that looks to me like fabric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is it?
So that piece is a batik piece. So what that means is I use a wax resist on the fabric, and then it's dyed in a traditional natural indigo bath. So I was doing a lot of work where I was teaching indigo workshops out of my backyard as mm-hmm. a way of making income. And, you know, I've been playing around with mark making on the fabric, and I kind of thought that that piece for a long time was a waterfall, and it sat in my studio for a mm-hmm. number of years before I finally realized that it was also a flag. And so mm-hmm. I, by putting that long fabric on a flagpole, it allowed it to kind of mimic a waterfall and also mimic a mm-hmm. flag simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So that piece was one that, you know, is a little more unusual for me, where I'm making something and I don't really have like an end game in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it finally, you know, hashed itself out in the past year, and I was able to show it last January, which was great.
I find it extremely attractive. I'd love to see it in person. Interesting. What you just said about it sort of found its own way. One of our Astoria artists, Terry Remington, once said to me, I bought a piece of her work, and I said, I'm not sure where it's going to go. She said, don't worry, it will find its place. And
yeah.
sure enough, it did. And I was like, wow, that is so cool. You know, it just found a spot. So... You, when you were studying in college, you were studying all kinds of art making. And then you chose sculpture. But I'm wondering if you're utilizing, you're back to a kind of all kinds of art rather than, or do you consider everything you do, is it just a matter of semantics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to contemporary art and people who are making work on a global scale, material really, I think sculpture has not been limited to material for a few decades now. And when I approach my work, you know, it depends on the piece in terms of what I'm going to use. I certainly started out earlier on using a lot of materials and processes that I felt were kind of viewed as more feminine practices, so mm-hmm. using fabric and sewing and dyeing. But then I would mount fabric over taxidermy forms, which are these prefabricated forms that are made to mount animal hides on as mm-hmm. trophies. And so I was really playing around with kind of these gender roles within subcultures and using that work to talk about things that I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it really fluctuates. I love working in clay, and I love working in glass and fabric, and I really do enjoy those craft mediums.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the work, it can really change. One of the pieces that will be at Southwester is that whale vertebrae cast
cement.
It is a very different object, just inherently because of the material that it's made out of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I started with the cement, and then as I scroll down, I ended up with the fabric, and I'm going, whoa, this is, okay, we've got everything going here. The good news is the Southwester is in Seaview. The show, which is, I don't know if it's open yet, it's going to be open on the 13th of mm-hmm. October through December 13th, and Tandy will give us the logistics on visiting. And will you be coming down at all? Will you be able to get to or over? Will you be at the Southwester at all?
Yeah, I'm actually coming out tomorrow evening to install the show, and then I'll be there through the 13th before heading home.
Okay.
So I will be there for a couple days working on it.
Okay. Well, congratulations again. I really look forward to seeing it. I'm glad it's up for a couple of months because it's kind of hard to get around these days. So
yeah,
that's terrific. And I had just wanted to throw this in that you had worked with questions with traditional roles of feminine and masculine, and that kind of You kind of covered that when you talked mm-hmm. about starting off with materials that were more feminine, but clearly you've mixed it up all the way around, so wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for talking. Now, Tandi, you still there?
Hi, yes.
Hi.
That was fascinating.
Great. Yeah, me too. So tell us a little bit about, because there are people out here who have never heard of the Sou'wester, a little bit of history. And also, I understand, before I forget, that you have music happening tomorrow night.
Uh-oh. Hello. Yes, well, the Sou'wester is located in CV, Washington. It has always been more than just a hotel. And so several years ago, we founded officially a nonprofit. And that administers our arts, music, and wellness programming. Obviously that has all undergone, or a lot of it has undergone a huge transformation over the last 6 months. But it feels like we're coming out at the other end with really exciting new programming and exciting new ways of sharing what we've always shared, which is, I guess, a love of art and music and wellness.
Well,
in new ways. So I think for our guests, they can still kind of experience the quintessential Sou'wester experience. And then also for our community members, we've maintained our music programming through live streams. We're reopening our art gallery with this show.
Right.
And we're also transforming our workshop series into what we're calling art kits or workshop kits.
Oh.
And so now, I think Carolyn was an instructor in one of our workshops years ago. And so she'll remember how fun it is to hang out with a small group of people in the pavilion creating.
Mm-hmm.
We have transformed that format, and so now we've invited many of the same artists and instructors to create kits with an accompanying instructional video.
Oh,
so
wow.
Guests here can purchase that through our online store and continue to participate in the creative process of making and making something with your hands, generally.
I love what you have done in the last 8 years with the Sou'wester. It was always a very special place to me with Len and Marian Atkins and the, what was it, not quite, what did they have?
They had a lot of funny things.
A lot of fun stuff, but yeah. You have taken it and just exploded it into, grown it so much. It's been wonderful to watch. Now, are you able to operate the wellness center at all right now, or is that
so? Currently, we have reopened our sauna. It's by appointment. We sanitize between every household or every group that enters, and so yeah, that has been something that's been really amazing because I think all of us need a little bit of that in our lives right now, and I feel good about being able to offer it in a really safe safe way.
So the way people can find out what's going on is sou'westerlodge.com. Okay, and they can, are you still marketing some of the artists' wares as well as other stuff?
We have some of that. We have an online store that is growing all the time, and so it includes some like amenities, beer and wine. We're also using that to distribute our VHS and vinyl collection.
Oh,
so
great.
Guests can continue mm-hmm. To enjoy that. We do have some art available. Certainly, any art that's for sale through the art gallery will be available in the online store.
Nice.
And we're also, of course, I think while we've all been going through this intense period in history, it's been so wonderful to be able to continue to provide a place for musicians to play or a place for artists to show.
Yes.
Even if it's in a different format. And so that has been something that I've been thinking about, is just staying true to our roots.
So
and just continuing to do what we've always done.
So
in an altered way, of course.
Tomorrow night is Mike Kuykendall.
Right.
From 8 to 9:30. And again, folks who are staying there will actually see him, but otherwise people can watch the streamed concert. Now, how do they find that? Is that also through your website, Sou'wester Lodge?
I think the live stream is through Facebook right now. Okay. Not the awesomest, but nonetheless,
okay.
There.
Okay.
The easiest way to find it. We also have a new YouTube channel that people are welcome to check out. It's got some of the instructional videos for the art kits, so you can browse some of the processes
mm-hmm.
that are involved. And the art kits are really diverse. There's like shoemaking and elderberry syrup making.
Oh,
and,
wow.
some stuff for kids.
Great.
Just really super cool art kits.
Okay.
But it also has a series of vignettes that we've been producing that are all about the artist residency experience.
Nice.
And they are just, I think, really sweet and succinct examples. So if anybody's got an extra 1 to 2 minutes, it feels like going down a rabbit hole.
Wow. I love it.
Check those out.
So is that Sou'westerlodge.com, or is that Facebook?
That's on YouTube. It's Sou'wester TV.
Oi. Do you have all this stuff listed at your website?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can find all of
Thank
it.
Thank you, because that makes it easier. Go to Sou'westerlodge.com and browse all of the offerings. And then when you get a chance, I can highly recommend Sou'wester. And when is the art gallery going to be open? How can people access Carolyn's art?
So it's going to be open every weekend, and then any time during the week. We say by appointment, but we just mean that you would ask the front desk to open the gallery for you. And we have sanitizer at the entrance, and it's one household at a time.
Okay. And your address?
We are located at 3728 J Place. We're on the Seaview Beach Approach Road, right behind the depot and the now defunct Rod Lamplighter.
Okay, so if you turn up 38th Street, or turn towards the ocean on 38th Street, you'll find the Sou'wester. Hey, Tondi, thanks so much for coming and joining me, and thanks so much for keeping the Sou'wester Lodge and all those other things alive and well.
Carol, it's so nice to talk with you.
Okay, take good care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're listening to KMUN Astoria, folks. KTCB Tillamook. CoastRadio.org. We are closing down our pledge drive soon, Monday, I believe. We aren't quite there yet. Please pitch something in. And, make a friend a member so they can feel great about supporting this fabulous station. Thanks, folks. Thank you.
down. Peace now. Peace now. Peace now.
Well, we want to wish John Lennon a happy 80th birthday wherever he is. And that particular rendition that you heard is from KABU many years ago. I was on my way out of Portland, and I heard it, and I turned around and drove to KABU and said, "What is that, and can I have it?" And the gentleman who had put it together put it on a CD for me so I could share it with KMUN. Now that's family. KABU is our sister station in Portland. And speaking of family, this is the family of KMUN. This is Arts Live from the parking lot. And I am delighted to welcome Molly Schulps. Hi, Molly.
Hi, how are you, Carol?
I'm okay. Now, you were going to be nice and close by, but now you're back in Los Angeles. Is that true?
Yes, yes. So I am a college professor, and our college required us to come back to California to round out the semester. So I'm currently teaching right now from California, but I was really fortunate to be able to work from Oregon, and I have a nice studio set up in Astoria, so it was really a treat to complete the show there.
Right. Well, let me tell folks what you're doing, and also welcome you, because you haven't lived here very long, have you, Astoria?
No, it's been, I want to say it's been almost 2 years.
Okay.
And okay. My partner and I do have quite a bit of family that lives in Oregon, and that was one of our reasonings for going there.
Well, we are delighted to have you here. Now that I've seen your work, I'm very delighted, and I'm sure Terry is also. Molly is opening a show tomorrow evening. Is the Astoria Second Saturday Art Walk. And Molly is opening a show at Imogen Gallery, which is right on 11th and Marine Drive. And the colors that you've got just burst off the, I was going to say page. Is that an appropriate word for a computer? They just burst out of the computer. I think I would be safe in calling you a ceramic artist. Is that right?
I primarily use clay as my medium. Mm-hmm. I dabble with everything, but primarily it's clay.
And this particular show, Sculpture and Vessels, the name of the show is Everything is Possible / Nothing is Possible. And it's a show together with April Cappini or Cappini. I like to say
Cappini, yes.
Is it Ch or K?
I think it's Cappini.
Good.
Because Terry would have to. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting April yet. We've just been able to communicate via email, so
right.
I'm not sure.
Well, I think I've actually had the conversation with April, but I'm so fond of Cappini that I want to call her that. So, and she is works in charcoal and pastel drawings, and folks who have been here and been to Imogen may be quite familiar with some of her work, especially her bees and animals in charcoal are just astounding. So I love the fact that you two are going to be exhibiting together. Both of you seem inspired by the love of the natural world and caring for it. So tell us what you do with your art and what we're going to be seeing in this particular show.
Yeah, so I was really fortunate. I went into imaging a while ago. It must have been in May. And I had the pleasure of meeting Celeste, and she introduced Terry and I. And we just hit it off right away. Terry's great.
Yes.
Very supportive and really tuned into the neighborhood and community. And so she thought this would be a good idea to have April and I show together, because I think the juxtaposition of our work with the bright, colorful imagery that I use and April's more subdued palette would be a nice contrast. So I was thrilled and able to make the work in a short period of time. And it was about 4 months I had to work on it. And I use my vessels and the sculptural work I do as vehicles to create visual narratives that deal with the environment. And in this particular show, I focused on endangered species of the Pacific Northwest. And so the process is tedious. I do use a lot of porcelain, which is a nice, it's a nice clay body to give you this really vivid palette of colors. And I layer and paint my glazes on and sometimes do multiple firings, but it becomes sort of the alchemy of using glaze and material and how I am able to make them more fluid. Some of them are commercial glazes, some I make, and it's taken a while to build up that palette, but, you know, it keeps expanding and you keep learning and growing as you work. So I'm just thrilled to be showing with April. And her work, too, has a lot of similar content. I think we're both interested in the same idea of preservation and how do we create more sustainability within the environment.
Right.
And how can we be a better steward of the environment?
Absolutely. And I found in your work quite a bit of humor, light, and then just looking at it, and then I think I read the lightheartedness and gentle reminder of the fragility of our world and delicate ecosystems. And that describes quite well. So one can just look at this and enjoy it thoroughly, just for the colors and the shapes and the animals, and then one can almost meditate on the work and feel, and especially when you're using the material like porcelain, which is quite breakable. So speaking
of
fragility and delicate. Well, I was going to ask you that. What, because I am not familiar, I took one class up at Clatsop College with Richard Rowland and discovered, and I discovered how much work it takes and how much time it takes to create. So I was wondering, can you tell us a little bit about, you mentioned using porcelain because it's a good back for the colors, but how, draw that out for us.
So, basically I either throw the forms or I handle them using coils, which are just ropes of clay, basically. And because I'm using that specific material, porcelain, I do have to allow for it to dry really slowly. So you have to really know that clay body. It's got to, you have to be very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And there's a high rate of loss with porcelain. After it dries a little bit, I start doing my drawings, and I do a lot of research prior to drawing on the pieces I'm making. I do a lot of watercolor painting, actually, and so I have just tons of sketchbooks and research, and I treat it sort of intuitively, and I let the space, the form actually going to dictate where my images are going to go. Mm-hmm. I don't pre-plan that part of it. I just let it happen. I do use a lot of familiar symbols as well. So you'll see Smokey the Bear or Paul Bunyan or things that are familiar to us and that sort of evoke a childhood sense of nostalgia. And after I finish that part of it, I let it dry really slowly under plastic. I fire it once slowly, then I inlay color into it. I sponge it all back down, and then I just start applying my glazes, and parts of it are more intuitive, where I let the color kind of speak to me of how I want it to look. But I also do work from a place of research and but it takes a while, you know, to build those to let all that come together, to gel together. And so sometimes it's done after a couple firings. Sometimes I have to go at it again. It just depends if I'm where I'm at with it when it's finished, if I like the way it looks or I feel like it's complete.
So can you do so if you aren't quite satisfied? Can you make changes after you've colored and baked and all of that? Or
So I fire the clay to a point of vitrification. So it is harder to fire it after. It means that it's impervious to water. And so if you do fire it again, typically I'll go a little lower. You can. I mean, I try to not do a lot of that because I am using porcelain, so I don't. That's probably like my least favorite thing to do, so I do try and get it right.
Right.
When I, you know.
Yeah.
Typically, I'll edit those out. So if I'm not happy with it, oftentimes I'll just edit those pieces out. But
I love it. That's quite a way of putting it. Edit out my art. That's what I need to do. Edit out my life. So the word delete comes to mind. But was I imagining it, or the last piece that I got to see? Again, this is all online. But was that a particular form of mushroom?
Oh yeah, that was
an amanita.
I think you're talking. The morel mushroom?
No, this was a red one with white dots, but it might have been something else.
Oh, no, those are the, I can't remember their name. They're poisonous.
Yes. Amanita muscaria.
Yes, thank you.
Quite poisonous. Yes. Yes. And,
thank you.
But it's one of the ones that everyone who lives in this area recognizes right away. So I saw it and I laughed again, thinking, oh, she just slipped that right in there. So, and
I use a lot of mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Well, you use.
I mean, I don't eat them.
Right. You don't have to. You put them in your art, but you also, you mix up the animals and the flora and the fauna and the all of the beings. So my understanding is that you grew up in an art household. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My father was a professional football player, and when he retired from football, he went to graduate school for ceramics at UCLA and completed his MFA there. And he worked with Laura Andreasen, who's just an amazing chemist and alchemist. And so I grew up working in his studio. And he really practiced the idea of Menge, which is this sort of Japanese craftsman's philosophy and identity. And so I was his free labor.
It was a good trade, though.
It was great. Yeah. And my mom worked with him as well while they were together. And so I was really fortunate to grow up with parents who encouraged me to actually be an artist and express myself creatively and allowed for me to shave my head and do all sorts of fun, crazy things.
Where did you grow up?
I did grow up in Topanga Canyon, which is in Southern California. It's known for being very hippy-dippy, really, you know, it was a really neat childhood. And
but
I was very fortunate.
But it's interesting to hear that your father was, before he became a professional fine artist, he was a professional fine football player.
Yeah, he was
not quite the trajectory we think of. So
he was definitely a gentle giant, and that's one of the reasons I used a lot of Paul Bunyan references. He passed away 10 years ago from cancer, and it was really a loss for me and hard to deal with. And so those folkloric images really started for me as a way to connect to the idea of familial references and how we also create our own folkloric kind of family structure. And and so those do play a big part in my work. And I think the idea of recognizable imagery is important to explore. But he was a big part of my, just how I grew up. And I really appreciate my mom and dad being so open with me creatively and allowing for me to express myself.
Were you an only child?
No, I have a really sweet sister, and then my dad had some other children along the way.
Are the others involved in arts, though, I'm wondering?
Oh, yeah. So my brother, my father remarried when I was about 10 or 11. And I have a really great half-brother named Marty, who actually took over my dad's business when he had passed. Mm-hmm. And so Marty's carrying on that tradition.
Nice.
And it's called Schultz Pottery and Knife. And he's doing a great job representing my dad and the tradition that my dad had started.
I'm sorry that he died early, but he did get a chance to know that both of you were taking a similar path.
Oh yeah, he actually. I was when I had first started teaching at the college I'm at right now. My dad actually was able to come and do a workshop, and it was so fun having him there. And,
yeah, nice.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we were really really close. We talked all the time on the phone. He was in Northern California. He had a ranch that he had converted his barn into a big studio. But when he was in Southern California, he was an apprentice, or he was a master potter, and so he had a lot of apprentices that would work for him, and he would teach.
And now here you are, director of Cypress College's ceramic department, and with masters of fine art from California State University. So it seems like you took so much of the good stuff, and in the Pacific Northwest, which is quite wonderful that you've chosen to be here in Astoria as well. Let me remind folks, Molly Schulps is my guest, and she is going to be opening a show called Everything is Possible, Nothing is Possible, tomorrow evening, actually tomorrow all day. Astoria Second Saturday Arts is now from noon till 8, and it's a show for Molly, and it's your first show at Imogen Gallery, and April Capini, she'll tell us, who will be, it's going to be a beautiful show. Thank you so much for joining me, Molly, and congratulations on the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled to be a part of the community and can't wait for the future.
Good. I look forward to meeting you in person. This is all happening at Imogen Gallery on 11th and Marine Drive. And it's also happening all over Astoria. And I'm going to let Molly go and tell folks a little bit what else is happening. And the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum has reopened with a black and white and red all over. That's R-E-A-D. It's the old joke about the newspaper. Local photos and the stories they tell. And that's in Ilwaco. The Cannon Beach Library is having their Zoom at 2 o'clock tomorrow with Apricot Irving, The Gospel of Trees. Apricot was my guest a few weeks ago. And go to coastradio.org podcasts if you want to hear more about April's work and the book, The Gospel of Trees. Cannon Beach Gallery is open Wednesday through Sunday from 11 to 4, and they have a group show right now with Susan McKinnon, Kenneth Ray Wilson, and Lloyd Lindley through November 1st. Here's an important one, folks. If you are an artist or belong to a nonprofit group involved in the arts or heritage, you can get money. Yes. Ah, now I hear all those ears perking up. The Clatsop County Cultural Coalition it's time for them to give out money. The applications are due at the end of this month, October 31st. The applications are on their website. Look up Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. It's at clatsopculturalcoalition.org. There is one more workshop. If you've never done this before, it's very good, very helpful to check in at a workshop tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And you can write to information@clatsopculturalcoalition.org or call 205-0329-8-9258 or 503-791-6207. Get those applications in, folks. You can have as much as $2,000. I have used those grants to do some incredible things here. Many people have, so you do have a good chance of getting it. But you have to make that application by October 31st. The Assistance League is offering the Pandemic Porch Parade tomorrow from 11 to 3, 10 porches. And we talked about the Southwestern Music tomorrow evening. The Coaster Theater is having Dickens workshop readings on October 14th, 6 p.m. You need to call them 503-536-1242 or 436-0609 and get the parameters for that. And I do want to send out special healing wishes for my Brownsmead family, Peterson Lane, and especially to Tori and Cheryl and Dan, and also to Josh and Ben Frederica, Christina Burney, and we'll throw Ted in there on Peterson Lane too, because we can always use healing wishes. And a big shout out to Squamish and Sechelt, my beloveds, to Wyoming, New York, Long Beach, and Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeret are this weekend. So I wish you Chag Sameach, good holidays. And since I have a little bit of time, I'll tell you that you can check out Discover Our Coast to get the whole list of galleries that are offering art in Astoria. And some of them have brand new shows, some of them continuations from before. So check it out and do stay tuned to coastradio.org, wherever you are. Thanks for being here, folks. Let's see if we've got some music ready for you.
Everybody want to stand up this time. Everybody must stand up because we's all Americans and so forth and so on. We are Americans. You can do this, you can do that. This is for everybody together. That actually is. I like to do the American anthem the way it really is in the air, what you breathe every day, the way it really sounds. flag was still there, big deal.